Welcome back to Internet Frenzy.
Welcome back, guys. I'm Whitney.
And I'm Joe.
And this is Internet Frenzy, and we're happy to be back.
My welcome back was actually, it was for them, but it was also for you. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's actually really funny because Joe had a individual
solo epi.
Solo, there we go. Solo episode last week. And someone commented, one, Joe accidentally posted the raw audio.
I was going to say this.
It was so bad. So he posted the raw audio.
There was 17 of you that listened to it. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for whatever it said. We corrected it after a little.
Yeah, only 17 people at that time had heard it. Because we had like uploaded it for probably like an hour and a half. And Joe texted me and he was like, look at this. You text me a screenshot of a comment. And I love whoever this was. She was like, this episode was a mess. We need Morgan back.
Welcome back, Morgan.
I'm Morgan now.
Yes.
My name is Whitney, but thank you. Thank you for missing me.
Yeah, I was like, one time I do a solo episode and somebody comments and is like, go home, bro.
So then he was like, oh man, did my episode suck? And he goes to click and listen to it. He posted the raw audio. So of course it's going to suck. The first like 2 minutes is silence. He hasn't even talked yet.
It's true, but guess what, guys? Now we're back the way we should be.
And he posted the edited audio now. So if you want to listen to the episode of last week, Joe's solo episode, go for it. It's really good once it's edited.
So in just quick recap, for those of you that did listen to it, the fake story was a story about the Ring doorbell. The lady visiting OP in the middle of the night multiple times.
That one was so creepy, like the way she was running.
Listen, I had to get it out of my brain because I just like had it in there. So hope you guys enjoyed that. If you got it right, good for you.
I knew it was that one because we just got a Ring camera. So I was like, I could tell. I was like, yeah, that's fresh on your mind.
And I even talked about it in that episode. Like I resisted getting a Ring camera for the longest time because I didn't want to see who was on my porch at any given time.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's fine. We got one because we needed to get with the times.
Yep, exactly.
But we're going with Trick or Truth Volume 2, yep. Episode 2, Part 2. And I'm ready for it. I brought a couple of heaters and I know you did too. Guys, what do you think of my hat? Sick, huh? Friends of the program, True Turf. Just had to rep the hat because they're launching our company this coming week. They will be officially rolling out. If you're in the Phoenix metro area anywhere and you need turf for your yard, putting greens, hit up the homies at True Turf because they are friends of the program. Hit them up for your turf needs. But let's jump into this week's episode, shall we?
No pretending.
Both of my stories this week are coming from the subreddit Creepy Encounters. Ooh. Buckle up, you're gonna crap your pants. This one is titled Creepy Babysitting Experience.
Oh, babysitting stories get me. I also have a babysitting story.
Stop it.
Yeah, it's so creepy. Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Honestly, to this day, this is one of the creepiest situations I think I've ever been in. When I was 15 or 16, I used to babysit for a family with two kids. They lived in an apartment complex and would ride their bikes around in the parking lot. One time we were out there playing when one of their neighbors started talking to me. I didn't want to be rude to the family's neighbor, so I chatted with him. He was asking me about school, if I was into sports, specifically if I was a runner because I had, quote, amazing legs.
Oh, wow.
Looking back, this obviously should have raised about a million red flags for me. Unfortunately, I was pretty desensitized to being objectified by middle-aged men, so I didn't think much of it. That's sad. But I was definitely tired of talking to this guy while I was trying to wrangle two toddlers, so I took them inside for lunch. Being a young fool, I didn't lock the door. We were sitting at the table eating lunch when the door opens, and lo and behold, in walks Mr. Legs. He closes and locks the door behind him.
What?
Finally, I start thinking, this is weird. I don't remember much about our interaction other than him saying he was there to get to know me better. I knew I had to get him right back out that door. I have no idea what I said to him, but it worked. He left, and I learned from my mistake and locked the door behind him. I was deeply unsettled, but blamed myself for the whole thing. I was so embarrassed that I hadn't locked the door when we came inside. Rookie move. The parents came home and I left, but I couldn't shake the heebie-jeebies. So I told my mom about it. Obviously, she was immediately like, what the F? We need to tell the parents about this.
Yeah.
So she called them and they called the police. Turns out this neighbor was on the run and wanted by the police. Or for R word. Needless to say, I am now obsessive about locking my doors.
Oh my gosh.
This girl.
And she had two kids with her.
Two kids.
Two little kids.
This guy was on the run from police at the time, and somehow she got him to leave. There had to be a million things that went right for her to be spared. Guys, we've been binge watching the series. We watched it on Hulu. It's called I Survived because we love true crime.
The best show.
But they do, like, you know, usually two or three stories in each episode. But one of those stories is always about a girl who was not as lucky.
Yeah.
That's just devastating the way that it impacts their lives, obviously. But like, this girl was just babysitting. What every 15 or 16 year old girl does.
Oh.
Runs in to make the kids lunch, and the dude just walks in. Thoughts.
It's wild to me that she was able to keep her composure, because I feel like if I was 16 and a man's walking in, I'm like, what are you doing? Get out. Ah, scream, run, kids. Like, going crazy. Yes, I'd be freaking out.
Like, if he was just being, like, casual, chatting you up outside, you'd, like, immediately think that he was up to no good.
If he came inside the house?
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, obviously, being outside of the situation, it's easy to be like, well, his intentions were horrible. You know his intentions were bad. He locked the door. But if you were had just been talking to him, he was friendly enough. He gave you bad vibes. But like, put yourself in that situation. He walks in. I don't know if you'd like scream. I feel like you'd be like, oh, crap, I'm in a bad situation. Like, how do I?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I would probably scream. So let me make this clear. He didn't live in that house, right?
No, it's apartment complex. So he was just a neighbor in the complex is what she said.
But yeah, so he's literally, that's where it's, I'm freaking out. I'm screaming. If a guy that's coming into my home that isn't his home, I'm freaking out. So kudos to her for keeping her composure.
Yeah, I just feel like maybe the walls would have been down a little more just because she's like chatting him up.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, everyone reacts differently and I've never been in that situation, thank goodness, but I feel like I would lose my crap. Yes. I would start throwing shit. Like, I would literally go crazy. I would go nuts.
Before anything, there wouldn't be like a part of you. It's like, I'm going to try to navigate this and get out of this situation.
That's true. Yeah, maybe.
Because it's like, obviously, it's one thing if he comes in and starts attacking her. But he comes in and yeah. Like, I just wanted to get to know you better.
Ew. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he's a creep.
That's so bad. There's got to be something she said that got him out.
Yeah, and that's the weirdest thing is she's like, I don't know what I said. I have no idea what I said to him, but it worked.
So scary.
Yeah. Oof.
Oh, dude, can you imagine like if that was like that's something that happened to our babysitter and our daughter? Or like, yeah, like I would lose my crap.
Yeah, I would be very, very upset. I would be so angry.
Yeah.
Luckily, we don't have to deal with that. Our neighbors are chill. Our neighbors are cool.
Oh, gosh. That's so wild. I was going to do my babysitting one first, but I'm going to do the other one. This comes from the subreddit No Sleep. My dying mother promised her guardian angel would protect me. I've seen it now, and I don't think it's an angel. My mother died 2 months ago. It wasn't a tragedy in the sudden, shocking sense. It was a long, slow, quiet, fading cancer. We had years to prepare, but you're never really prepared. The last week was spent in a sterile, beige-colored hospice room that smelled of bleach and quiet finality. I sat by her bed, holding her thin, papery hand, just watching her breathe. She was at peace with it. That was the strangest, most difficult part. While I was a tangled, screaming knot of grief and anticipatory loss, she was serene. On her last day, when her breathing was shallow and her voice was a dry, rustling whisper, she pulled me close. Her eyes, which had been cloudy and distant, were suddenly crystal clear. "Don't be sad, my love," she whispered. "I'm not afraid. I've never been afraid. He's always been with me." "Who, Mom?" I asked, my voice thick with tears. "My guardian," she said, her gaze shifting to a point just over my shoulder. "My protector. He was a gift from my own mother when she passed. He's kept me safe my whole life. He's never let any real harm come to me. I didn't know what to say. My mother had always been a little spiritual in a vague, non-denominational way. I just assumed it was the morphine talking, a final comforting delusion. I squeezed her hand. When I go, she continued, her eyes looking back onto mine with a startling intensity, he will pass to you. He has to. He needs someone to watch over. You will be safe now, always. Mom, don't talk like that, I choked out. You won't believe me at first, she said, ignoring me. But you'll know. There will be 10 marks, 10 signs after I'm gone. When you've seen the 10th, you'll know he's with you. And then you will see him. She recited the marks to me then, her voice low, rhythmic chant.
No.
A coin returned, a silent bell, a path cleared, a saved fall, a warning unheard, a fear answered, a scent of the old earth, a touch of cold fur, a voice not your own, and finally, a gaze returned. She finished, and a deep, peaceful sigh escaped her lips. She closed her eyes, and a few hours later, she was gone. The funeral was a blur. The weeks that followed were a suffocating fog of grief and paperwork. I was just going through the emotions, a ghost in my own life. I'd completely forgotten her strange final words. They were just the ramblings of a dying woman, a final, beautiful, meaningless piece of poetry. Then, the first mark appeared. I was at the grocery store, fumbling for my keys in the parking lot, and the quarters slipped through my fingers, clattering onto the dark, wet asphalt. It was late, raining. I looked for a minute, but it was gone. Probably rolled under the car. I sighed, wrote it off, and drove home. When I got to my apartment and emptied my pockets onto the dresser, there it was, sitting right in the center of the pile of my keys and wallet, a single dry, gleaming quarter. I stared at it. It was impossible. My pockets had been empty, but my grieving mind immediately supplied a dozen rational explanations. I must have had another one. I must have picked it up without realizing it. I dismissed it, but a tiny cold seed of unease had been planted. A coin returned. A week later, the second mark. I was walking home from work, taking my usual route past an old decommissioned church. As I passed its silent stone bell tower, I heard it. A single clear resonant bong of a great bell. Echoing through the quiet afternoon air, I looked up. The tower was still. The great bell was motionless. No birds flew out. No one else on the street seemed to have noticed. An auditory hallucination, I told myself. Stress and grief do strange things to your mind. A silent bell. The third mark came a few days after that. My work building is old and the maintenance staff is constantly doing repairs. I was heading to the break room, but the hallway was blocked by a huge wheeled cart full of tools and equipment. Left there by a worker who was nowhere in sight. I sighed, annoyed, and turned to go the long way around. I got to the end of the hall, turned the corner, then realized I'd forgotten my wallet at my desk. I turned back. The hallway was empty. The massive cart was gone. The whole process had taken less than 30 seconds. There was no way anyone could have moved it that fast. It had just vanished. A path cleared. I wasn't just uneasy anymore. I was starting to get scared. These could not just be coincidences. They were too specific, too perfectly aligned with my mother's strange prophecy. I started to feel like I was a character in a story that someone else was writing. And I started to feel like I was being watched. It was a constant, low-grade, prickling sensation on the back of my neck. I'd be in my apartment and I'd feel a sudden, intense pressure as if someone had just walked into the room. I'd spin around and my heart pounding, but there was never anyone there. I started seeing things too. Flickers of movement at the very edge of my vision. A shadow in a doorway that was a little too tall, a little too dark. When I turned to look, it'd be gone. Mark number 4 happened a week later. I was clumsy with grief, not paying attention. I was walking down the stairs to my apartment's lobby. I missed a step and I pitched forward. I remember the sickening, weightless lurch, the flash of the hard tile floor rushing up to meet me. I braced for the impact, for the crack of bone, but it never came. I just stopped, a foot from the ground, suspended in mid-air for a split second, as if an invincible, powerful hand had caught me by the chest. Then I was set down gently on my feet. I stood there trembling in the empty, silent stairwell, a saved fall. The 5th and 6th marks came in quick succession, like a 1-2 punch from this invisible force that was now ordering my life. I was about to get in an elevator at a shopping mall when I felt a sudden, inexplicable wave of pure dread, a silent internal scream telling me, "Do not get in." I hesitated and let the doors close without me. A moment later, the lights on the floor indicator went dark and a loud, grinding screech echoed down the elevator shaft, followed by the distant sound of the alarm bell ringing, a warning unheard. That same evening, I was walking home through the park. A large barking dog off its leash came bounding towards me, its teeth bared. I froze, a jolt of pure primal fear shooting through me. The dog was a foot away, ready to leap, when it suddenly stopped. It let out a high-pitched, terrified yelp, tucked its tail between its legs, and fled, as if it had seen something standing right beside me, right behind me. A fear answered. I was 6 marks in, and my life was no longer my own. I was being guided, protected, manipulated by an unseen, unknowable force. The feeling of being watched was a certainty now. I began to see it more clearly, though, never directly. In the reflection of my dark TV screen, I'd see a shape standing in the room behind me. It was tall, stooped like an old man, with arms that were too long, their hands almost touching the floor. In the reflection of a shop window as I'd walk by, I'd see it, a dark, hulking shape, following a few paces behind me, always keeping to the shadows. The 7 and 8 marks brought it closer from a visual presence to a physical one. I started to notice a strange smell in my apartment, a smell that would come and go without reason. It was a heavy, musky animal scent. The smell of damp, rich earth and something else, something like wet fur, a scent of the old earth. One night I was lying in bed, the lights on, my nerves a raw, jingled mess. I was drifting in that gray space before sleep when I felt something brush against my outstretched hand. It was a coarse, bristly feeling, like touching a thick, wiry animal pelt. I snatched my hand back with a choked cry, my heart exploding in my chest. I was alone in the room. There was nothing there, a touch of cold fur. I was 9 marks in. The terror was a constant companion now. I knew the 10th mark was coming, and I knew that with it would come the final terrible reveal. I didn't know what I was more afraid of, the waiting or the seeing. The 9th mark came last night. I had finally managed to fall into a fitful, exhausted sleep. I was woken up by a voice, a low, guttural, wet sound, whispered directly into my ear. It wasn't a language I knew, but I felt the meaning of the sound in my bones. It was a word that meant mine, a voice, not your own. I spent the rest of the night huddled in a corner of my living room, clutching a baseball bat, watching the shadows, waiting for the dawn. Tonight, I knew it would end, the final mark. I sat on my couch, the TV off, all the lights in my apartment blazing. The feeling of the presence in the room was overwhelming. It was a physical pressure, a thickness in the air. The musky animal scent was overpowering. I could feel it just there, in the dark hallway that led to my bedroom, waiting. I don't know what came over me. Maybe it was a year of grief. Maybe it was weeks of mounting terror, but I was done being scared. I was done being the victim in this ghost story. I needed to see it. I needed to face it. Okay, I said, my voice a shaking, defiant whisper to the empty air. I know you're here. Show yourself. The air in the hallway seemed to shimmer, to darken. A shape began to resolve itself out of the gloom. At first, it was the familiar stooped silhouette of an old man. It was tall, maybe 7 feet, even with his hunched posture. Its arms were long, the gnarled 3 jointed fingers of its hands brushing against the floorboards. Its body was covered in a thick, matted, greasy black fur. And then it lifted its head, and I saw its face. It wasn't a man's face. It was the long, narrow, bearded head of a goat. Its horns were thick and curved, spiraling back from its narrow skull. But the worst part, the part that finally completely broke my mind, was its eyes. They weren't the dumb, placid eyes of a farm animal. They were a pair of intelligent, ancient, and malevolent yellow eyes. The pupils horizontal slits like a serpent's, and they were looking directly at me. A gaze returned. The 10th mark, the final sign, my mother's guardian angel. I didn't scream. The sound was trapped in my throat, a solid, immovable ball of pure terror. We just stared at each other for an eternity across the 20 feet of my brightly lit living room. And in its ancient yellow eyes, I saw it. The same serene, peaceful, knowing look my mother had on her face when she died. It is my protector, my guardian. It has been with me, a silent, unseen shadow for the past 2 months. It cleared the path for me. It saved me from the fall. It frightened away the dog. And now that I've seen it, it no longer feels the need to hide. I'm writing this down from my desk. The sun has come up, but it has brought no comfort because it's still here. It's standing in the corner of my room by the door. Its stooped, hairy form, a black hole in the morning light. It hasn't moved. It just watches. My mother's final words echo in my head. I've never been afraid. He's always been with me. What do I do? How do you escape a guardian angel? How do you run from a protector that will never, ever let any harm come to you, but whose very presence is a fate worse than death?
Whoa.
I know. Powerful, huh?
That's crazy. Honestly, I was not expecting a goat.
I
was fully expecting a werewolf.
Really?
You guys, yeah, like I thought for sure it was going to be like scraggly old 3 jointed hands werewolf.
No, you didn't.
I did. I did. I swear. I did not expect it to be a goat with serpent eyes. I didn't.
You're so sarcastic. I really thought when I started reading it, I thought it was going to be like an evil, like spirit, like man, like figure. kind of thing. I didn't think it was going to be like an animal.
It's definitely like that. There's definitely the evil vibe coming from the goat.
Yeah.
But OP, I don't know if OP is a boy or girl. I don't know. A fate worse than death?
I feel like it's pretty creepy. I would think I'd rather die than know of a creepy goat man presence watching me at all times. And I can see it all the time. That's so creepy. What's crazy is that the mom passed it on to her daughter, and then she's dying. She's passing it off to her kid.
Yeah.
That's wild.
So, I mean, if that's what has to happen, that's what has to happen. Has to be passed on, I guess. Maybe it was preventing the mom from dying. So she had to pass it on in order to, like, move to the next realm.
Yeah, like, and that was the thing, is, like, that she was saying that the guardian angel will never let any harm come to her, but she had cancer. So, obviously,
she couldn't die until she passed along the 10 omens, the 10
signs,
the 10 rules of having a goat spirit watch over you.
I know, the 10 marks. That would trip me out.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, your last final moments with your mom, and it's her chanting these, like, low, deep, weird shit? Oh, my gosh.
No.
So scary.
I'd be freaking pissed.
I would. You're like, Mom, don't do that to me.
I was just going to say, you took the words right out of my mouth.
I know.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mom, don't you dare. Nope. Like, let it just be peaceful. If you've got some curse,
well, send it to the other son, frick.
Yours to keep, or yeah, give it to one of your others.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It wouldn't be me, because I'm her favorite. I'm the favorite one. Steady as a rock.
I feel like my mom would give it to me because she would think I'm strong enough to handle it. That's literally, it would be me.
Yeah.
She would give it to me out of all the kids. That's so messed up.
You know what?
I'm going to have a talk with her now. I kind of.
Oh, like you're going to go be the strong one and go after her now and tell her not to do that?
Yeah. I'm going to say, I don't want it. Give it to one of your other kids.
Well, she doesn't have it.
We don't know. This person didn't know.
You'd be more likely to get it from Grandma Halcombe.
Anyways, that was my story. I loved it.
Wait, it's over?
Creeped me out. Yeah, that's it.
That was it?
Yeah, it was only 20 minutes.
Dang.
I know.
Well, okay. The goat. I'll never sleep again, but I guess that's why they call it no sleep. This comes from the subreddit. I think I said that both of mine come from Creepy Encounters. They don't. This one comes from the subreddit Paranormal.
Okay. I've never heard of this.
Paranormal.
Creepy.
The title is, My Daughter's Imaginary Friend Knew Things She Couldn't Possibly Know.
Oh, this is terrifying. Okay.
This hits extraordinarily close to home because we have a daughter about the same age who has an imaginary friend. I don't really believe in this stuff, or I didn't. Now I'm not sure what I believe. My daughter Emma just turned 5 last month. Around her 4th birthday, she started talking about her friend Clara. Typical imaginary friend stuff at first. She'd set a place for Clara at dinner, talk to her while playing, normal kid things. My wife and I thought it was cute, but Clara was weirdly specific. Emma said Clara was 7 years old, had long black hair, and wore an old-timey dress with flowers on it. She said Clara was sad because she missed her mom. About 2 months ago, things got strange. We were having breakfast and Emma suddenly asked why we took down Clara's picture. I had no idea what she meant. She insisted there used to be a picture of Clara in the hallway upstairs. We've lived in this house for 3 years and never taken down any pictures. Then last month, my wife was going through some boxes in the attic looking for old baby clothes. She found a photo album that belonged to the previous owners. They'd left it by accident, I guess. Inside was a photo from 1982. A little girl, maybe 6 or 7, with long black hair, wearing a floral dress. Written on the back, Clara, age 7, summer 1982.
Whoa.
My wife showed me and we both just stared at it. There's no way Emma had ever seen this photo. It was buried in a box under a bunch of other stuff in the far corner of the attic. Emma's never been up there. I asked Emma to describe Clara again. She described the girl in the photo perfectly. The dress, the hair, even said Clara had a tooth missing in the front, which you can see in the photo if you look close.
Oh my gosh.
We didn't tell Emma about the photo. We weren't sure what to say. A week later, Emma told us Clara doesn't come play anymore because she, quote, found her mom. She said it so casually, like she was talking about a friend who moved away. I did some research on the house. Found an old newspaper article from 1983.
A 7-year-old girl named Clara Bennett died in a car accident about 2 miles from here. Her family lived in our house from 1978 to 1985. The accident was in 1982, same year as the photo. Emma hasn't mentioned Clara since she said she found her mom. I keep trying to rationalize this. Maybe Emma saw the photo somehow and we forgot. Maybe it's just a weird coincidence. But the timing, the details, the way she described everything before we ever found that photo, my wife thinks Clara was real. That she was here and Emma could see her. I want to think there's a logical explanation, but I can't find one. Has anyone else experienced something like this with their kids? I'm not scared exactly, just really unsettled. If Emma could see Clara, what else can she see that we can't?
That's crazy. It gives me so much comfort just knowing our daughter's imaginary friend is Maui from Moana, because it's like, no way she's seeing Maui, because Maui's not a real character, you know?
Exactly.
So that's helpful, but that is terrifying.
Legitimately terrifying.
But it's also kind of like, not that it's cool, but kind of cool.
It's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. It helps that they were like friends and not like this Clara was like haunting them, you know? That would be terrifying.
Well, okay, that made me think of multiple things. But the first thing I'm going to say is that Theo Vaughn had two guys on his podcast this week that are ghost hunters.
I love that. I love that so much.
And they told some of the most, just some of the gnarliest stories of what they experienced going into haunted places and like trying to get spirits to communicate with them.
Ooh.
That's a world I've never ventured out into, and I'm very comfortable not. I remember hearing stories about a park that was haunted in Cedar Hills, Utah.
Okay.
That's like the neighboring town to where I went to high school. So me and my friends, you know, would poke around only a fair amount. We avoided the places that were verifiably haunted, but there was one night we were up there, and as we're going away, you can only kind of see it through this clearing where we had pulled over to like see the park, check on the park, down a little hill between this clearing, and we saw that there was a little girl on the swings. And this is like middle of the night status, little girl, long dark hair, just swinging on the swing. And it's like, in my mind's eye, I can still see it. I just got the chills. And this is the other thing. No wind, no nothing. The swing was absolutely moving because we could hear it squeaking.
Oh, wow.
Legitimately.
Were your windows rolled down?
Yeah, no, we had gotten out of the car. There's a little walking path that goes down to the park. I didn't explain it very well because like...
Yeah.
Geographically, it's kind of hard, but it's like down behind.
So you're outside and you look and you see it. And what do you guys do?
Could hear the swing, could see... And somebody was like, is that a little girl? And then we all just lost our shiz.
Gross.
Dove into the car.
Yeah.
Needed out.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. That's so creepy.
That happened.
Yeah.
Shit. Might have been Clara, dude.
Clara was there. She just wanted to say hi.
She just is like.
Was looking for her mom.
She's like, dude, do you guys know where my mom is?
No, that's so creepy. So this story is off the subreddit, True Off My Chest. So this story is called The Babysitter's Monitor. I've babysat for this family for almost a year, and nothing weird has ever happened until last Friday. I can't stop replaying what I saw on that monitor or what the dad texted me the next morning. Two kids, a toddler and a 1-year-old baby girl. The parents are kind, the house is quiet, and I've never had a single reason to feel uneasy there. That night started like any other. They left around 7:30, and by 8 o'clock, both kids were asleep. I set the baby monitor on the counter and started scrolling my phone, half watching a movie. At 8:17, I got a motion alert. I looked down and caught a flicker of movement on the screen, a dark blur crossing the crib. My first thought was that the baby rolled over or maybe the blanket moved, but she was perfectly still. I waited. Nothing. A few minutes later, another alert. This time, the movement was faster, a shadow cutting across the room. I felt my stomach drop. I turned the TV down and just listened, but the house was silent. No footsteps, no creaks, nothing. Still, every part of me screamed to check. I grabbed a kitchen knife and crept upstairs. The nursery door was cracked open, the monitor's green light flickering through. I pushed it open with my foot and flipped on the light. Nothing. The baby was still fast asleep. The closet was empty. The window was locked. I told myself it had to be a weird lighting thing. Maybe my mind playing tricks, and went back downstairs trying to calm down. But a few minutes later, the monitor flashed again, and this time I saw it clearly. A figure, tall, broad shoulders, moved past the crib so fast the image glitched. That was it for me. I ran upstairs, heart pounding, knife in hand. I flipped on the light again, ready to grab the kids and bolt. The room was empty, and then I noticed it. The baby monitor wasn't pointed at the crib anymore. It had been turned toward the mirror across the room. That's when everything clicked. The movement I'd been seeing wasn't the baby, it was a reflection. Someone had physically gone into that room and turned the camera. I didn't think. I grabbed the baby, ran to the toddler's room, scooped him up, still half asleep, and sprinted outside. I called 911 and the parents from the front yard, shaking so bad I could barely hold my phone. The police showed up within minutes. They searched the whole house, no signs of forced entry, no open doors, nothing missing. They said maybe I bumped the monitor earlier without noticing. I didn't argue. I just told them I wouldn't be coming back. The next morning, the dad texted me. He said they asked their neighbor to check their Ring camera footage from that night. At 8:11 p.m., 6 minutes before I saw the first shadow, the neighbor's camera caught a man in a dark hoodie hopping their back fence and walking toward the house. And a little after 10 p.m., right after I ran outside with the kids, that same man was caught on camera hopping the fence again, heading the other way.
Are you kidding?
No. Babysitting stories scare the crap out of me.
Don't worry. That chapter's closed.
Now I just babysit for life. That's basically my life. But so scary.
That is... Okay. So many thoughts.
I know.
So many thoughts. First of all, I hate the police. Come on, guys. Come on, guys. Do your due diligence. See the thing through. You had to know. You had to know there was going to be somebody else that had something. Goodness. We're going to have to pay for the subscription for our doorbell camera so that it records.
Thank goodness for the neighbors because, I mean, the parents even could easily write it off that, like, yeah, maybe she moved it. Maybe it was just like a shadow. Heck, you could even think maybe it was a ghost. Like, you just don't know. But the fact that they were physically able to see a man jump over their fence, they know that, like, okay, we got to have better security here and turn the video into the cops. Let's try and catch this guy. It sucks. They probably never will, but
no.
Unless he comes back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. Could you prove that he committed a crime? All they have evidence of?
Oh, yeah.
The hopping the fence and then coming back.
Well, he entered into the backyard.
I mean, yeah, I guess.
I don't know
trespassing.
You've got to be trespassing if you're going into someone's backyard. Like hopping a fence.
Sketch.
They're probably going to get a dog, I'll tell you that much.
Well, they should if they haven't considered it. Get you a Mastiff.
Yeah, get a little pit bull out there.
Man, pit bulls are too friendly. The big myth. Everyone, just tell your friends.
How do you feel about the babysitter? How do you feel like she handled it?
That's great. What more could you do as a babysitter?
Exactly.
If we hired a babysitter and she calls me and she calls 911 and like the whole thing, I would be so unsettled for a long time.
I don't think I would hire a babysitter ever again. I am like a huge scaredy cat and I babysat and nannied a lot of kids growing up. And I always thought like, what would I actually do? Like literally, what would I do if that was the case? I feel like I'm sure I would do what the babysitter did, grab a knife and run upstairs and get the kids. But part of me thinks I might run outside by myself and call the cops.
No, you wouldn't.
I don't. That's so scary. You have to go upstairs and get the kids when you know there's someone in that room. That is so terrifying.
You know what? You're not giving yourself enough credit. You would definitely run upstairs and save the kid's life because that's what you do.
But I think about like, for example, like I was outside with my daughter, my kid, and there was a bee. There was a couple bees that was like attacking me. And I literally sprinted away, like fled. And then I was like, shit, my kid. And so then I'm like trying to get her to come without actually having to like go back over there. Like I was so scared.
And that's just a bee?
It was a couple bees.
Just
I got her, but still, like, my first thought wasn't, like, my child. It was, there's a bee on me.
Well.
I know it's different, but that's the only thing I can compare it to.
But you don't always do what's best for you. That's the point that I was trying to make. Like, I think you would try to save the kids. You would save our own kid if it was something that was life-threatening.
I would.
We had our friends play a prank on us when we were camping one time, and they put a fake rattlesnake in her tent when she like it was set up in there so that she got in without knowing, turned around, and then there's this snake and she thought that she was gonna get killed by a rattlesnake.
Yeah.
And she starts freaking out, like as soon as she sees it, she doesn't realize that it's fake, and like everyone's quietly laughing outside that knows what's going on. I said something like I was gonna like check on you or whatever, and you were like, Joe, don't come in here, don't come in here. It'll kill you. It'll get you. So you were
face yourself. About,
yeah, I could have.
Because it was right at the edge of the, when you get in. So it would have snapped at you if it was real.
Yeah, but it, don't you, in, it's just a perfect example. Would you think you would want somebody to just save your life, but you actually were more concerned about me than yourself in that moment.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, you're right.
Honestly, what a grip of stories. We had some.
I'm scared.
We had some.
Yeah, we had some good ones. Follow us on Instagram. Subscribe to our YouTube. Listen to our podcast every freaking week, baby. It's so fun. So which one do you guys think was the fake story of this week? One of them was completely fake, generated by ChatGPT. Comment on socials. Let us know. Trick or truth.
Volume 2. We'll see you guys next week. Be safe. Take care of yourselves. Lock your doors.
Internet frenzy on 3. 1, 2, 3. Internet frenzy. No pretending.